so clean and beautiful outside this deep underground bunker. I don't want to be out here too long, though. Who knows if we even still have oxygen on this planet?
That's true. You got to be careful.
All right. So we're before the intro. What's that about?
We are approaching the point in our recurrent Kickstarter campaign where we just put all of the money in an evil lamp and hope that our our podcast runs for a year.
I have to tell you, actually, I've been looking forward to this all day.
This is a nail in a comically reopened coffin. I mean, Killapalooza is a perfect analogy. Every time you nail the coffin shut,
every time you nail that double feature shut,
somebody digs it up and pees on it with fire, and lo and behold,
the curse is revived, right? So, for anybody who doesn't know, we have a Kickstarter every year to fund the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it always works, but it always works by $2.50.
Right.
Yeah. Thusly giving us heart attacks.
Yes.
So we had this new idea. We arrived, if you've heard the additional content, you actually probably know where this is going.
Right.
We give everybody a heads up on that. I have good news and bad news for you. Actually, I just have fucking good news for you. Yeah, additional content. It's a side show of Double Feet. It's another podcast we do. It's a secret.
Not to be confused with a side show, but it is a side show.
Well, no, this is the side show, let me tell you. Additional content's another show. So if for some reason you never know what the fuck we're talking about on that and you don't know where this is going, now's actually the time to get in on that. We're not doing another Kickstarter.
It's done.
Fuck it.
Finally.
It's over.
Fuck it.
It's over. No more Kickstarters.
Fuck it, man. That's it.
But that wouldn't be a very exciting announcement if we didn't have something else to back it up with.
No more Kickstarter, also, and
we
thank
chose
you, goodbye.
Kill ourselves. Right. That's how we chose to deal with the end of the year. We're going to do...
I'm ready.
A Patreon.
Patreon. I've heard of this.
We've done a deep dive into this Patreon business. We have studied it daily for a month now. Mm-hmm. And I guess only a couple weeks. Literally since we did that additional content, we've been sitting in the same chairs. And this is totally the way to go. I have to hand it to you. You were right. Although it sounds suspiciously well-built for our show, it is perfect for the show.
Mm-hmm.
Contingent on one thing.
Yeah? What's that? Is it maybe a financial goal that you have to meet within a limited amount of time?
That's our favorite part, right? You and I can think it's perfect for the show, but if nobody else thinks that, we're still fucked.
That's true.
So as excited as I am, because I would totally sign up for this fucking thing, whereas I would usually give the finger to the Kickstarter, I think they're going to like this better.
Lump sums are hard, man. Lump sums are hard. That's why porn sites offer one-year memberships.
That's why you get in on Suicide Girls in December. You buy it as a present, but you gift it for yourself.
Right.
You're just trying to get around to another free cams joke, aren't you? Isn't that where this is going? See you a mile away, man. We need to get $1,000 out of this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's on a reoccurring basis, but that's way fucking better because we usually need to get $8,000
in 2.5 weeks.
As if we got a fucking bill in the mail that from the government just going, we're going to foreclose on your state if you don't give us.
Mm-hmm.
Is that still how it works? I don't know. Again, that's
how it works in Oklahoma and Florida, I think.
So then there's an emergency and you have to have a fundraising concert or whatever the fuck you do.
Right.
So that the bowling alley doesn't close.
Right.
And I don't want to do that. That sucks.
Right. Plus, neither of us are good at stunts or dancing or a-thons of any type.
I can speak on your behalf that you don't want to do that either.
I do not at all.
The only kind of marathons that we have energy for are slasher marathons.
Right. The only marathons we're down for are the ones where large groups of people die.
This is also awesome because instead of waiting for a whole fucking year... We can do this right now. There's a really cool thing. It's already live. So this is Patreon. Mm-hmm. Are you going to check me on that? You're good on that?
You got it.
That's how new and fresh and shiny this is.
Also, it's just you didn't even put it in these notes, by the way. That's how trusting you are. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. Patreon/double feature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we even got a fucking thing on the end of the, isn't that cool?
It's good. It's, yeah, we got it.
You can go on there. There's only really one thing that's really, really new, different kind of concept for this that I want to talk about. And that is this thing that people have probably been waiting, I don't know, 6 years for ever since episodes started disappearing.
Right.
There is a double feature cloud library that contains every scrap of everything we have ever done
right
in our goddamn lives.
It makes it so, like, for example, if you were the kind of person who needed to go through back catalogs for the purposes of a massive spreadsheet or something, this would be this would be a gold
right
mine.
Up your alley. I haven't even told John about this. I hope he flips out. I actually, you know, some people who heard the AC have sent us messages and they're all for it. They just wanted to endorse this idea in case we sounded too like on the fence about it.
Yeah.
They went, oh, totally. And they didn't even know about the library.
Right. No, every step of this conversation is like, hey, this is a better idea. That's where we are right now.
I think that's why we chose it.
Yeah.
I think
I don't want to stress just that it's a better idea. I want to stress that it's a no-brainer that we've been sitting on the sidelines for the last 3 years. That's what I want to stress.
I know. But listen, it all comes down to if people are into this or not.
Yep.
'Cause it's different. And that's the scary thing for us.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that's different about it is we got to go do it now. There's no, hey, everybody, we're going to announce this, and then you can start paying attention in 3 weeks when it really matters.
Uh-huh.
You got to go to this right now.
Right.
It's patreon.com/double feature. So there are these different levels, like on Kickstarter.
Right.
But you get this new thing that I've been building on the site. You haven't even seen it yet. You were the test monkey shot into space on a couple of these things. But
right.
I've built in this crazy membership login thing. So when you sign up for this, you will get a login to doublefeature.fm where you will find this giant pile of, you know, depending on which level or whatever on the Patreon, all of this content to stream or download. It's on a separate server. It's wicked fast. It's a better storage mechanism than even just having all this stuff on a hard drive. Mm-hmm. It must be a terabyte of shows or something. It's crazy. We're going to be building it out more. I'm going to make a thing so you can search and watch it by movie and all this, but none of that really matters. I don't want to dwell on the, you know, go on there and read it all.
Soak it up.
The pick of film is back, but it's reoccurring now, so you get more of it.
Mm-hmm.
The executive producers of the show actually get to run the show, right, which is pretty
job.
Cool.
You get a fucking job.
They actually get to pick all sorts of content right. now, and the AC can just be fucking theme-centric mm-hmm. or all of this other stuff. And really, I hope it works, because it's a good enough idea that I would be upset if we got through all of those terrible Kickstarters and then we finally had a good idea and it didn't work.
Right.
The problem, so let me just lay out the fundamental problem here. I'll just be super honest with everybody, because I don't get to do the thing where I cry at the end of 4 weeks and then people feel bad for us and give to the show. I'll just say it all now. We have a bunch of people who listen, but the 100% transparent fact is 1% of those people, a little less actually, give to the Kickstarter every year.
Mm-hmm.
We fucking love you guys. Some of them are brand new. Some have been around forever, but it's only 1%. Right. And I get that because I'm the type of person who would listen to this and go, eh, Kickstarter. I don't know. I'll look at it later.
Right.
And then the goal goes by and I go, oh, is the show still up? Oh, good. It is. Well, solve that problem. We can't do this just on the 1%.
Right.
We have to get that number up. We need more. And that's the only fundamental part that frightens me. But we have so many things on there that we put at such cheap level. We want everybody to be able to do this.
Mm-hmm.
patreon.com/double feature. I don't want to yap about it forever.
Right.
All this stuff is on there. And let us know if you want to fucking do this or not.
It's going to be fun. It's going to make the show a lot more engaging too. Yeah, I hear the sirens though. So maybe
open the hatch. Let's get back down there.
Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
Hey,
You're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
My name is Eric, and with me to count down the top two movies of this week is Michael Kester.
All right.
It's in actually, no particular order.
It's a tie this week. It's a tie this week.
Thank you. I was like, man, I fucked that up already.
So the two movies, it's a tie for first place. Really excited to announce this. So the tie is Murder by Death, and then coming in just 24 minutes later, 24 minutes behind, is Burying the X. Tied, though. They tied. It wasn't a race.
And we're going to talk about both of them.
Yes, we are.
Now, we have some people that we're talking about this time. One brought us the movie. Well, right. one of the movies.
Nathan, it's Nathan's fault that we're watching Murder by Death. It's Nathan's fault.
He so knows our show that this movie would... This is one of those type of movies where... I mean, it's actually a little more even than this type of movie. But we'll see this movie and I'll go, it's raining outside and I'm having a great time in this mansion double feature.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't there more of these?
Right.
And Nathan goes, here's some money. Watch this one. thank you, Nathan. It's a movie probably made by people who sit indoors in a mansion mm-hmm. while it's raining outside. I wanted to ask you a fun little question here.
Okay.
So we have all these people on the schedule who want something from mm-hmm. us.
Mm-hmm.
They gave some money so we could come on here and plug a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is Nathan's episode, so we don't have anything to plug. Nathan wanted to do this episode. But for a long time, there's a guy named Sean Taylor, and he just wanted his name mentioned during, you know, a good horror episode, a nice gory episode.
Okay.
And, you know, Murder by Death and Burying the X on the outside doesn't look like a terrible episode for that. There's a lot of dying. But what I actually wanted to ask you at some point on the show, now that we're getting towards the end of the year, if you were to look at the schedule and try to figure out, let's say not even in a double feature, but just two of the goriest movies this year.
Okay.
Do you have an idea for what you think those would be?
I can tell you without even going back and looking through the whole thing that definitely Taxidermia makes that list.
Oof, jeez. That's gory in a way that I was not anticipating.
Absolutely Taxidermia. What else do we have in pure unadulterated gore? Man, I don't know. The gore is so relative this year. There's so much relative gore.
I know. The first thing I thought of this year, and then I went, well, I don't know literally if there's that much gore in it, but Green Room was something that came to mind.
Green Room is strong, yeah.
But also the, you know, to toot my own horn here, 31 was pretty gory.
That's true. Watch 31 was gory, yeah. I would also just you know, in the spirit of the year, Full Metal Jacket.
Right. Right. All Cheerleaders Die is up there too. It's some movies I've been thinking about pretty recently. So I wanted to wait until we had a large collection in order to find the goriest examples. And also, Sean, if you're listening, watch the next couple episodes. See if you find anything. you know, Basic Instinct might
you're
get pretty bloody.
Him.
Who knows?
You're tricking him.
I don't know. All right. So now that we have a special countdown of gore that people just randomly got, I hope they enjoyed that. That seems like a year-ender thing, so I'm glad we randomly put it on one of the shows. Much better idea. We've got these two movies.
Yes.
Burying the X is going to go second.
Yes.
We're going to spoil them. Mm-hmm. 24 minutes in is Burying the X. And if you've literally listened to any other show, you will know a good starting point. If you listen to this show, it's a mystery.
Murder by Death. We have a few. I believe we have... It looks like there's only one more coming up this year. But I'm going to go on record and say that Murder by Death is going to, at least this week, take the crown for best film somebody brought me to see for the first time this year.
Oh, sure. We do have a couple more of those.
I get to be specific because some people picked movies I had already seen, so that's different. But this
right.
Murder by Death goes on record as movie I would not have seen had Nathan not picked it for double feature and is also the best movie.
It's, you know, for people who thought Clue took itself too seriously, there is Murder by Death.
I think one of the things that I love about this movie, everything is the short answer to that.
Right, right.
But the final scene when, believe it or not, Truman Capote is giving the rundown to each of the detectives about why he doesn't like them. And there's kind of the illusion that they're all mystery writers. And he says, you introduce characters at the very end of the movie. You know, come up with a plot device that never makes any sense. That is the moment for me where I go, this movie gets me in a way no other movie ever has.
I was watching this going, this movie understands Michael better than I do. I have heard you give the Truman Capote speech in this movie on so many occasions.
Ugh.
And every time I kind of go, yeah, I mean, I see where you're coming from, man, but I don't know why it upsets you so much. But it's, you know, why we had trouble, especially in the early days, covering, I mean, not just Fight Club, but anything that even delivered a twist.
Yeah.
You had like strict written on the board rules about what is acceptable as a twist and what you just fucking made up in the end to cheat me.
Yep.
And I think that came from a sense of trying to figure movies out.
It definitely comes from trying to unpack a puzzle. And this movie is great because it uses a very, very subtle device amidst all of its lack of subtlety.
Mm-hmm.
It uses a very, very subtle device, which is that all of the detectives live in a world where they know more about their immediate world than the audience. So when they go, you're actually this person, I go, I mean, I couldn't have known who that was, but I'm assuming, yeah, they function in this world.
Sure.
Assuming everybody knows who that person is, you know? So I don't feel cheated because the movie is kind of, it operates at a level where I go, these people have more knowledge than I do. And they're supposed to, right? They're the experts in their field. They're supposed to have the maximum amount of knowledge.
Well, this movie gets kind of funny over time because I think the older it is, the less pop culture iconography it has.
Right.
You know, the people who were big names, that it's almost a scary movie for its time. You know, it's making incredibly contemporary references about a genre, a genre that's not even really in favor anymore, let alone all of the people it's mentioning. And at the time, these were, you know, the whole thing's kind of based on a told Agatha Christie story, which was her most popular thing. And now is like half the people on our show don't even know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe half the hosts on our show, maybe both the hosts on our show. But also, you know, I recognize the Pink Panther movies and the off-referenced House on Haunted Hill movies and Orient Express and Cheap Detective. All of that kind of stuff is represented in here. But there were very popular film and television. I think I don't even know most of them, to be honest with you. The one that's so important, and I want to talk about Truman Capote, but that's a totally other thing. Don't let me forget that. The one that's really important for me is understanding the sort of say your goddamn pronouns character.
Yeah.
Well, because this is, it's a play on what is Harley's character of time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But today you're just seeing an old movie with an actor in yellow face.
Yeah.
And
no, you're going, it's super, super racist. It's still super racist.
Well, that's the thing that's really funny about satire over time like this is at the time it was really
still
pointed.
Racist.
No, I think it was really pointed. I think it's, I think it is mocking that caricature. I think it is using for humor what other movies thought they were getting away with.
I think it's still racist because I don't think that there's any capacity with which you could do blackface today that would make it pointed enough to be not racist.
Well, what if people were doing blackface on TV every day? I mean, that's the difference, right?
Well, in retrospect, it's not okay. Just because the climate is such that yellowface doesn't feel super offensive doesn't make it okay 30 years down the line.
What if in the days of...
And it's Peter Sellers. Like, I want to be... I honestly, this is probably the least offended I could be by a role like this.
I'm glad we disagree about this because I want to figure out where that lies.
Yeah.
Because at first, all I felt was, it sucks that the racist guy has the best jokes.
Right.
That's the part that sucked for me. I was just going, these are really, really funny, but That is so racist. Mm-hmm. But I mean, what was the character name that you mentioned?
Charlie Chan.
Charlie Chan, right. I don't know who played Charlie Chan, but there's also the Boris Karloff character, Inspector Wong.
Uh-huh.
And Peter Lorre played, you know, Mr. Moto or something. There were a bunch of these back in the heyday of film. And, you know, like you said, Yellowface is a little bit harder because it was so embraced then.
Right.
And like nobody seemed to fucking know it was a problem. And blackface comes from an era that I can't even imagine, when I could not name the year that was okay.
Right.
It was like 1624.
The answer is never. That's well, what I'm
mean,
saying.
Okay, hold on. But I mean culturally appropriate. When did society, right. when sure. was society all in unison about being sure. wrong about yeah. blackface?
Yeah. Definitely later than you'd expect.
Okay. So
probably close to like 1958, I would say.
I mean, yeah. Of course, yellowface is not okay or funny.
Uh-huh.
Actually, it is funny.
I would disagree with you, and I hate that, but I would disagree with you.
It's in just this so movie. Absurd, it seems it's like.
The absurdity
but
itself.
Blackface is so absurd, too. But I mean, yellowface is like, you even think you're getting away with this?
I know.
I mean, it's yeah. just so...
Well, it's just an unrecognizable caricature of an individual.
I know.
It's just... I know. And I mean, it's... With anything like this, when you're portraying another race this way, I'm looking at that going, you think you're doing a caricature of a race of people, when in reality, I think you'd have a hard time finding one that was even similar to you.
Okay, how about this? Let me try this for you. Let's pretend we're in the future. And in the future, looking back, so you're going to have to go along with me on this.
Okay.
Because we can't do it in the past. Obviously, these things are just too wrong. I can't try and imagine what it was like when this was cool with everybody, because I imagine myself standing there being like, why is everyone cool with this? Don't talk about this.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's 50 years in the future.
Yeah.
And they are looking back at how fucking disgusting it was for men to play women on television.
Uh-huh.
Right? They're looking at like the Madea movies and they're going, wow, people were okay with this.
Yeah.
It's horrid and offensive.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe even, you know, more accurately, we're seeing already, but we'll see in the future, straight people playing trans.
Sure.
Or straight people playing queer people.
Uh-huh.
And to look at how that community immediately sort of said, no, fuck you guys. Mm-hmm. we're gonna make entire right. television shows that get this and are about this.
Right.
But if we take something a little more abstract, just like men playing women, mm-hmm. in the future where they think societal norms have come to a point where, for reasons that we could only speculate right now, that was deemed as disgusting, don't you still think we could have a movie today where someone makes fun of the fact that Tyler Perry dresses as a woman, and in doing that also does it in a smart way, but has to dress as a woman to do it? You know what I mean? If Ricky Gervais creates a movie where all he does is fall down the stairs as dressed as a woman.
Yeah.
In 50 years, don't we look back at him doing a thing that's still wrong? He's dressing yeah. as a woman, but he's doing it in order to go, why does Tyler Perry get to dress as a woman? And why are you people buying tickets to this?
I just don't think that's the point to make. And
really,
I counter your argument with John Travolta and Hairspray. That's my counterpoint to your argument.
Well, just because a couple of weeks ago we decided John Travolta is great and can do no wrong doesn't mean that people are going to go, oh no, except that one time John Travolta was in Hairspray. That one was okay.
I cite last week's episode of just agree with whatever the kids are saying.
Yeah, I know. Well, the reason this is important to me is because the movie itself, in being satirical, it is calling out things that it is not okay with.
Sure. Absolutely.
And in doing that, oftentimes, if we're to take a thing like blackface out of this, mm-hmm. and we're to say, okay, so pretend you're not mad that people dress up in blackface. Pretend you're mad that people write crappy endings to their books.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a movie that has a bunch of crappy endings in rapid mm-hmm. succession.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's pretend that writing a crappy ending was culturally offensive.
It is, but
and
continue.
So you criticize it by mm-hmm. having a movie that has just load upon load of crappy endings.
Mm-hmm.
Now replace crappy ending with blackface.
No, I understand your point. Here's the thing.
Is someone allowed to use blackface at the time that other people are using it to point at it and go, this isn't really something we should use.
Yes, but that doesn't make it not offensive.
Okay.
That's my point.
No, no, no. I'll give you that. I was still offended while watching.
Yeah. No, totally. It is. Like I said, this is probably the, this is the most acceptable, unacceptable yellow face in cinema.
I'm going to have to ask Richard Elfman about that.
Oh my God. Because it is pointing at things like that. And it there's so much that I was worried that this was going to be the whole conversation. So I'm glad we've kind of reached a middle ground, but there's so much of this movie that is, it's cultural because the detectives are, you know, five different cultures and five, right? Am I counting that right? I feel like I'm missing one in my head, but maybe.
Well, they're all from different backgrounds of mystery fiction that is cultural. So right. some of them.
I forgot about, who am I forgetting?
There's kind of the Belgium versus, that's part of the gag is to say, well, how many different cultures are there here?
Sure.
Are you the same? No, we don't want to be identified that way. We want to be identified this way.
Right. So wait, let's go over this just in my head. We have the hardened West Coast Californian gumshoe.
Right.
Played by Peter Falk.
So really quick, that's going to be Sam Spade from The Maltese Falcon, I think, only because of the secretary. So I know that's one I know. The other is I'm totally out of here.
And then we have the kind of British nanny type played by Bride of Frankenstein. And then there's the great pompous Frenchman who's Belgian.
Uh-huh.
And then Charlie Chan. Is that it? There's just the four of them?
Well, and I mean Truman Capote.
Right. So right. True.
Okay. So a couple things on the satire ends.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to talk about Agatha Christie just for a minute because I think it feeds so much into what we were just talking about and maybe gives us another point of reference. Or maybe it just happens to like tangentially be more baggage for the movie.
There's somebody we're missing.
I know. I was thinking that too, but I don't know who it is. I don't know.
Maggie Smith's husband. Yeah, the British kind of Sherlock Holmes type. The one who goes to the bathroom and then disappears.
All right. I'm not sure I would call him the Sherlock Holmes type, but okay. I'll go with it. So the Agatha Christie book was one of her most popular books. It's And Then There Was None.
And Then There Were None.
Then There Were None. Yeah, that's right.
And Then There Were A Valley of Violence.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, so this was a book that was so good, it escaped its original title.
And became 10 Little Indians, I know.
Right. Which is also funny because it's 10 Little Indians.
Uh-huh.
Like it didn't get that much better.
Uh-huh.
We were like, let's not throw this on black people. Is there like another race we could be? I know. In America, we killed a bunch of Indians. So it would be more culturally appropriate here to call it 10 Little Indians.
God.
And then everybody bought 10 copies. No, I think by the time it came here, they'd replaced the words with 10 Little Indians, but I think it was, And Then There Were None as a title. Uh-huh. I don't know, but I just thought that was fucking funny too, given the hyper irony of changing the name, probably to be less offensive, but it looks like just to make it more culturally offensive to our specific region. That's fucking hilarious. But Truman Capote comes at this from a whole, I don't think this is necessarily any kind of critique of Truman Capote. I think he's doing it. It just gets to be him who's calling everybody else out
for being a shitty writer because he's Truman Capote.
But I do think in retrospect, this also does a funny Truman Capote thing.
Yeah.
A terribly dark, awful, funny Truman Capote thing because this is, the whole time I'm watching this, I'm going, Truman Capote, really? Is this really?
Right.
Is this actually?
Yeah.
Wow. Well,
my first thought was, holy shit, Truman Capote. My following thought was, Philip Seymour Hoffman did a really good job. And then back to, wait, is this seriously Truman Capote?
No. My first thought was, who's the guy they have playing the guy who sort of looks like Truman Capote? And then as the film went on, I went, is that Truman Capote? Because they're not really making a joke on Truman Capote in this movie. I don't really understand why they'd make him look that way. But that dude had a macabre life. He was just surrounded by suicide, this whole life. And actually, to go really well hand in hand with the movie, he died of something like alcoholism.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Consumption.
So it was not an external factor. It wasn't that a person killed him. It was that his own actions killed him.
Right.
Now, you could call it suicide, But it might be more accurate to say he murdered himself.
Right.
That's insanely ironic. Like, crazy ironic that this movie would consider and make a joke about how Truman Capote died while Truman Capote just stands there not dead yet.
Right.
That's weird. So, just, you know, gonna go ahead and throw that out there. And then you have the movie written by the writer, I think, of the Odd Couple movies. So we get this pairing of all of these different personalities and how they might work with each other or against each other to solve Truman Capote not murdering himself.
One of the things that I really want to hit on with this movie is how it sets itself up to be this grand, mysterious discovery, right? The movie shows up, everybody goes to the dinner table, communism is just a red herring, and then Truman Capote sets up the whole plot, find this mystery by midnight, and then whizzes backwards through the door. And immediately, this is the best thing about this movie, is immediately the detectives all go, we're pretty smart, so what if we just all just don't? What if we just don't?
Right, right. They are the people, again, in Scary Movie or Scream in particular, they're the people going, no, we've seen horror movies, let's just all stay in the house and hold hands and guard the exits.
And so they have to run out a couple times, and then, but honestly, the movie, the big thing is that there's going to be a murder, and the murder ends up kind of not being that big of a deal.
Right.
They kind of go, here comes the murder, and then there's a murder, and they go, huh, who did that?
Right. Or arguably the only murder being their weekend.
Right.
As we hear later.
And so when you get the kind of, I mean, it has fun because you get the sort of, these are the various ways a person can die in a mysterious mansion.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is fun. You get to play with all that. And then the scene at the end where each detective comes in and tries to one-up one another.
Yeah.
It's essentially, this movie could have been five different films. It knows this, but it's set up to be five completely different films. There's different second halves where it's all five detectives. They get into the dinner room and then you kind of go, well, this is following just, you know, it's choose your own adventure, right? Mm-hmm. Well, I choose this character and this is how I'm going to go through this story. And this is my sidekick.
Well, it's as much eight different wrong stories as it is, you know, stories that it retrofits the other stories.
Right.
It's a little bit like an exercise of you have a line of nine people and the first one, you know, we're going to take a story, everybody add a sentence. Mm-hmm. And the first one goes, my sentence is the end. And the second one goes, you fuck. Okay, fine. Well, it turns out it's not really the end. You were skiing or something and then you die.
Right.
And they continue to sort of pile on and include. I could see them all going in the room with a theory that didn't fit any of the other theories.
Right.
And then trying to cunningly like build the prior agreed upon theory into their theory. And, you know, you don't ever really fucking know if anyone was murdered and they all walk away confused. Brilliant.
One of the things that I want to talk about with burying the ex briefly, I just want to cover this briefly. But did you see
Dick Miller? Is that who you were? Did I see Dick Miller, one of the five characters in this film?
Yes. Did you see Dick Miller's name tag in?
Not this time. I saw it the last time. I remember laughing at it.
Right.
What was it?
Paisley.
Oh, sure.
As in still playing Walter Paisley from Bucket of Blood.
Oh my God. That's really, really fucking funny. A lot of Herschel Gordon Lewis love in this movie as
well. I feel like, so with Joe Dante, he's often said, hi, I'm Michael, co-host of Double Feature, resident Joe Dante expert. Uh-huh. So Joe Dante has often said that Explorers was kind of his most personal movie because those characters, those kids loving comic books and all that stuff really felt like he was putting himself in the movie. I'd be willing to bet Burying the Ex may have taken the throne or be right there next to it.
Yeah, because it seems so.
I honestly believe that Anton Yelchin's character in this feels so much like Joe Dante in a world that doesn't understand Joe Dante. Actually, this movie feels like a movie made in a world that doesn't understand Joe Dante.
Can I give you even one more specific?
Yes.
As a person living in Los Angeles, this is the Los Angeles I see that isn't real Los Angeles.
Yeah.
All of these things are incredibly real. People actually go to them, but I've never met a person who is I've never met the central character of this movie, who I feel like doesn't everyone from Los Angeles have to be that person because of all this stuff.
Sure.
So I feel like this is very much how Joe Dante would like to perceive the world. It's how LA should perceive itself.
Mm-hmm.
And above all, I think it's a movie going, I'm going to create a world for people who like my other movies.
Right. But are unfortunately betrothed to the real LA. That's the, this could be us, but you married Los Angeles. That's
yeah. Yeah, that is it. Well, I mean, you know, for us, this is a movie that goes finally our head represented in the physical world. But sure. I think for people who don't align with all this stuff, it does a fantastic thing. I wish you and I got more, which is a look into someone else's head and how they perceive the world.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get that nearly enough. And for people who don't see this movie this way, know that this is someone else's head. And you are now looking inside it and seeing the world that way.
I mean, it's super emblematic when the Satan curse happens, because he like unpacks the Satan curse, and you and I, who are just of this mind, go, oh, next thing you say, bad news. And then he just says it, and then they never touch on it again. Uh-huh. It's almost as if the movie goes, you know how this works. A film that was trying to pay attention to its non-audience would be a little bit more deliberate, maybe have some sort of death curse, maybe have some sort of, you know, instruction manual made in human skin. But instead, Anton Yelchin just goes, oh, this crazy Satan thing looks like wishes come true. And he goes, man, I wish we would never break up. And then throws it in the trash. And you and I are like, oh, well, yeah, that's how this movie goes.
Yeah. And if nobody knows that's where it came from,
if you blink, let's be honest.
Right.
If you're up making a sandwich at the beginning of the movie, none of it will make sense as to why, because they don't touch on it anymore. And it doesn't matter. The point, Joe Dante knows this. The point is that she comes back from the dead, not by what witchery does she come back from the dead.
Also, look at the character reactions. This is such a typical moment where you have, you know, this is a Romero problem. We're going to do zombies in a movie where people know about zombies. How do we address this? And so these people have to be shocked that someone is alive, but not so shocked that it shatters the world.
Right.
So if people could just come back from the dead in real life, we've talked about this before. This is a offsided Penn and Teller thing. If a UFO landed on Earth, you don't go into work. Right. You don't resume your day. Everything has changed. None of that matters. You know, you immediately move on to a totally different track. If you find out that people can come back from the dead, not one thing in your life is the same as it was a second before.
Right.
But that's not the point of the movie. It's a lighthearted romp. So somehow they have to deal with, and I mean, it's very tricky here, I think, because the fact that this is grounded in reality so much is what makes it to go, this is very, very, you know, it's real people. It's you or me hanging out in this movie. We've all had a clingy ex-girlfriend. Mm-hmm. You know, we've all had a relationship go south. Mm-hmm. We've all met the cute girl at the movies.
The dream girl. It's lowest common denominator, like our group, like everybody who went to the Music Box Massacre splooshed in their pants when this girl came into this movie.
Right.
Because she runs an ice cream shop that's horror themed. Yeah. And then goes to the New Beverly alone for double features.
I know.
Because she likes the director.
Oh my God. I'm going to die. Yeah. And the fact that they basically throw regurgitated art house senses at each other.
It's arbitrary. It's total just sploosh bait. I mean, it is Joe Dante fanboy, lowest common denominator dream girl.
So it takes place in that world where both of them would have the same reaction, which is, oh my God, a zombie. This is going to be a big problem.
Yeah.
And then it just moves from there. Yeah, so much so that they can go out to a club and they can, you know, they could go through the actual motions, the beats of the story that they need to without constantly addressing. By the end of the movie, there's a zombie spinning a fucking arrow sign.
Right. I know. I'm much to your chagrin. Yeah.
You know how much I love those stupid signs. Those signs, and also the automated women that spin the signs. I don't know if you're as familiar with that.
Not familiar.
Well, we used to put signs on poles. Welcome, 2017 audience. We used to put signs on poles, which was just a stick in the ground. And then we had human beings flip the signs But we had to pay those people. So instead, we built robots that look like people that flip the signs.
There you go.
Instead of just using poles, which we were originally. It's just mind-numbing. It's all just mind-numbing. They go to this club, and actually, I don't, for as much as I know LA in this movie, I don't think this is a real club.
Okay.
There are many a golf nightclub in LA, and I think this is the, what the fuck is the Saw? Lacey Street, right? Mm-hmm. I think they built this at the Lacey Street sets. That's my guess. But it's the one scene in the movie that is just littered with people, and you have a zombie there drinking absinthe, of course. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you do that? Do you know who else is in that scene?
Let me see. Random guess, Roger Corman.
No, he was at a wedding that day. He couldn't come to the he couldn't come to the golf nightclub. If you look, you'll spot her. It is our friend Pandy Suicide.
Oh, I didn't read that. That's funny.
Who is hanging out in the, that's what made me think, was Pandy just at a club and they filmed mm-hmm. this there?
Yeah.
But I don't think it's a real thing. She is, you'll notice her by her fucking back tattoo. So distinct, but she's a waitress like serving drinks or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about her a little bit. She was in the double feature movie. You can do another Spot the Pandy. That'll be a thing. Oh, now.
Speaking of spotting things, now 8 months or 8 weeks down the line, there was a Spot the Hotter in Ghoulies that I know you didn't catch. Continue.
Oh, fuck you. In Ghoulies. Yeah, actually, you told me that before and we just let it slide. And
yeah.
Is he in the background serving drinks?
No, he's right at the beginning of a movie. He gets ghoulied pretty quick.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it's in the college one.
You know, even though you narrowed it down to one Ghoulie film and being the very beginning, I still don't think I'm going to go find it. Can you give me like a timestamp and I'll look up a still on the internet?
0.05.
That's not a timestamp. That's not anything. That's no measurement of anything.
Blood alcohol level.
It's a 0.05 on the hotter absinthe scale.
Yeah, it's a 0.05 on the embalming fluid consumption scale.
There's just a lot of stuff in here. I mean, there's stuff that has wider appeal. You knew New Beverly.
Yeah.
And Hollywood Forever has a bunch of movies knows. I don't know if you can just get buried there. I think you might have to like do something.
Yeah, let me just, to be fair, that was the only piece. It's so stupid.
Your suspension of disbelief is gone.
I know. It was. I love this movie, but I was just like,
she came back from the dead from the Hollywood Forever Cemetery.
I'm sitting there. I'm like fucking Johnny Ramone and fucking Adam Sandler and your ex-girlfriend.
Right.
Sorry, was that too soon? The Adam Sandler joke? Too soon?
Hashtag actually too soon. Or was it actual too soon? I don't remember.
I think it was
hashtag.
Actually too soon, yeah.
We're the only ones who have ever used it, so it doesn't matter. Yeah, there is, there's that, the Ramone statue.
Yeah, Johnny Ramone.
I think, borrowed from Linda for the movie. Among the 10,000 pieces of borrowed stuff for this film. But it is littered with both the subtle and the overt references to everything we've ever done on a double feature.
Right, yeah.
Things we haven't yet gotten to on double feature.
We'll just call it Fanboy Splooshdom.
It really is. So much so, here there's another one that's not even in the movie. This was done much like we talked about All Cheerleaders Die.
Mm-hmm.
There was an earlier version of this movie. I think it was a short. I think it was the sort of film a short, turn it into a movie.
Sure, right.
Or
the current climate for films these days.
Right.
That's what that's called. That's how you make a movie 2017.
But Danielle Harris played the female interest in the short.
Interesting.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Huh.
Totally weird. I don't know if you could see that anywhere, but I think that would be amazing. These are all the reasons I think that it's probably a pretty divisive film. I think it's a movie that the people who are on the inside of it adore because it's made to be adored.
It's,
and the critics will tell you not to see it.
Right. It's definitely a movie that is for Joe Dante fans.
Mm-hmm.
That Joe Dante, I feel like, remember a couple weeks ago when we were just naming what movies would be like when people, Burying the Ex would have been that movie for Joe Dante.
I don't remember this.
Del Toro's Dark Secrets.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Is that out yet, by the way? Yeah. It so mysteriously popped up on his IMDb.
I feel like Joe Dante's 5 years ago would have been burying the X. The point at which he no longer cares what you think about his movies. He's just going to make the movie he would have made anyway.
Can you give me the Tim Burton one of those? Assuming it doesn't already exist.
Well, I think the joke back then was Big Fish.
I know. But I was thinking, I think they're so caricatured at this point. I don't think we could make one, but I have been thinking about that.
American Gothic, Tim Burton.
Okay.
American
All Gothic. Right. Well done. Yeah. Well done.
Thank you.
Johnny Depp is American Gothic.
Right. Yeah. That's Johnny Depp in American Gothic.
Can someone please put Helena Bonham Carter?
Oh, yeah. And Johnny Depp in the painting.
In the painting. Please. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I need it.
Tim Burton's American Gothic.
Oh, Jesus.
Summer 2028.
I have forgotten where I was. The thing that, all this fanboy stuff aside, mm-hmm. which is all glorious, it's all wonderful, yeah. and I have no problem with it, but the actual reason that I really cherish this film is it's a thing so early on that it seems to have done so eloquently in a way that I don't even feel like our show even has for constantly trying to hold up movies like this. It talks about, he's challenged on why do you like all this fucking weird stuff
mm-hmm.
by his girlfriend
mm-hmm.
who did not listen to our show about 10 Things I Hate About You.
Right.
Otherwise, this whole fucking thing, when you don't watch the movies each week, this is what happens to you.
Also, again, in just this movie being my own voice, the amount of rage that goes through my body when she folds his posters is it's tangible. Tangible rage.
My one sheets. God. Yeah, I know. It kills me.
It just really knows the audience almost to a fault, I would say. It's not widely critically right. acclaimed is because if it's not a Joe Dante fan, you just go, oh, that was okay. I'm like, what are you talking about? I heard myself speaking through the movie for 90 minutes.
This is actually, of everything we've ever done on the show, this is the thing I feel is closest to the double feature movie.
I agree.
I think if more people had just heard Double Feature, it'd be the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
If the Double Feature audience was the size of the Joe Dante audience, it would be almost identical to what's going on there. But, you know, fingers crossed. Uh-huh. I can always hope. Year 10, right? Year 10. But the way he replies to that challenge is to say this in a way that I don't even think I could have, which is that the movies themselves, the whole fandom, the culture, all of it challenges us in a way where, you know, we're forced to stop accepting the world. We're forced to wake up from that sleep as the trash humpers amongst us will think about and, you know, face our inner monster and conquer it. It's such a small idea, but you could unpack that you could unpack it for 462 shows if you really wanted to. But you know, this idea that we build these things, and Dante's arguing that it does two things. It lets us view the world in a different way, challenge, right? To challenge us to look at the things we accept, or mm-hmm. rather even to challenge the things that we accept.
Mm-hmm.
That's all the taboos we talk about. That all of the, you know, society looks at this one way. Why don't they look at it another way? It is actually trash humpers.
Right.
Talking about trash humpers as the mm-hmm. the negative space. And then the other side of that is to say, face our inner monsters and conquer it. And it's not something we talk about a lot on the show because it's a really fucking personal thing, right? But I'm sure I've had movies in here and I'm sure everybody in the audience has had movies that the whole 24 minutes should be about how this person conquered this thing.
Right.
And you know, it just doesn't, you'll notice like on the depression movies, I always spend a lot of time talking about that. Mm-hmm. I can't not do it because it's just on my mind the whole time. But Lars von Trier is a good example of that, even for himself as a filmmaker. This is a person who, when I have this thing eating at me, artist therapy, I'm going to make a movie and at least show other people what it looks like. Mm-hmm. Or show other people who have that how I feel. And so when somebody looks at a thing that has a very cheap aesthetic to it, when you go to a con and you just see all sorts of, you know, homemade costume and this extreme lack of subtlety everywhere and, you know, ridiculous monsters, and you're so buried in fandom. I think an outsider could look at that and go, what the fuck? What do these people do? I don't understand this obsession with all of your little monstery things.
With
I don't
get fruit it. Brute.
Yeah, right. Why does that fucking stuff matter to you at all? And you could easily dismiss Fruit Brute as a nostalgia thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, these characters live and work around this as a way, you know, Dante would say to go against the status quo and to constantly keep their opinions in check and to challenge stuff that might really be fucking with them. In this case, in the literal sense.
Right.
Somebody comes back from the dead, you basically use a bunch of horror tactics.
Well, yeah, that's the thing is if they didn't live in this kind of world, just to pat, you know, Joe Dante's audience on the back, he's almost going, well, of course I know that if this happened to one of you, you're all very well equipped to deal with it. But these normies, they would just get eaten by a zombie. But you're well equipped. Right. You guys know, you know the ins and outs of this scenario. And Uncle Joe has taught you everything you're going to need to know for when your shitty LA gluten-free girlfriend folds up your posters.
It's true. It is absolutely true. Or the problem that's really, this could have been a whole movie about, maybe I will steal the entirety of this film and just replace the antagonist.
Mm-hmm. But, I call it 10 Little Indians.
Dick Miller makes a joke about meth heads.
Yeah.
That's a thing here.
Yeah.
That's a real
meth head actors. Is that what that's called? Is that what that means?
Anybody doing any fucking weird thing out on the streets of LA, like running in and telling you about zombies and take meth heads, especially downtown. The amount of crazy stuff I see and I go, wow, there's a lot of weirdos in LA. And then I get too close to it 100% of the time, meth heads. It's, I think it's probably dangerous, but it's also just really funny to me. And so I should probably stay away from it. But I just, you know, when people from LA go, oh yeah, you know, all these people with meth out here, blah, blah, blah. They're saying it like, be careful. And I'm still looking at it like, oh, so meth heads just do a bunch of wacky things, huh? It's like Bugs Bunny for me out here. I don't know. So listen, the one thing to take away from this, I think, is in future double feature endeavors, where you might have thought burying the X is not the prolific thing that will change your view of all film. If you haven't been thinking about it, consider, as we do, especially horror films, what is the demon at work in those films? What is the antagonist? And, you know, how does both the antagonist and getting over that relate in your personal life or maybe the life of the people who made these? I think more times than not, the demon in the film is something, you know, the writer or the director is trying to get through. And it's a crazy piece of insight. And it really applies to, you know, all of the art. It's like Freud for art. We have a website. On the website, I'm going to put a couple things this week. I'm going to put my favorite vagina, and that joke is still pissing people off.
Best vagina you've ever seen. That's the linguism.
Going to reveal the best vagina I've ever seen until this competition is over.
All right.
Actually, I think didn't that start because I was talking about the best vagina I've ever seen?
So maybe. I don't even remember
what that was about.
No. The beginnings of these things are completely irrelevant.
Listen, totally unrelated to the best vagina I've ever seen. I'm going to put those stills of Pandy Suicide on the site so you can see where she is in the movie. There's no vagina in those stills. Use Bing. Also, I want to put a list. I have this list, and this is a fun little thing I was able to get. Of all the fucking references in this movie to everything. And I think it's their clearance list. So it's all the things they had to actually log and go through. It's not worth it to read it on the show. It's long. It's just a long list of stuff. But I'll stick it on the website in case you're curious. And then you could use that to go back in the movie and spot, you know, all the
hotters.
Seth Hanisick, Liam Duffy, Christopher Peterson, Jeremy Mumenthal, Athena Banks, Tom Comey, Jill Kester, Eric Tachek, and Charles Crawford all helped make this. I hate the sound of my own voice. That's it. After a decade, I'm over it. Turns out I'm over it. Thanks to those guys for helping us make this show and talk about these ideas and talk about the ideas coming up next time on the show.
Ongoing quest for best vagina you've ever seen concludes or the next chapter is next week when we cover Park Chan-wook's The Handmaiden and Basic Instinct. Get it? Basic Instinct. The pair, so we kind of did this thing We did this thing a little while ago where we put Intolerable Cruelty with How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, where we kind of went, this is how the highest form of this genre can be created, and then this is just the quintessential form of the genre.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of doing that again next week, but it's fucking hotter.
it's Kane hotter?
Oh, God. You're the worst. Meth heads, watch more fucking film.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.
That was not me asking meth heads to watch more fucking film. That was
wait. Did you say the name? You said the name of the movies, right?
I did. Yeah.
Okay. Meth heads can watch more movies if they want. It's not a, you're not prohibiting them from, listen, they have inner demons they need to work through too. All right. I'm done talking to you this week. I'm done.